The podcast you are about to listen to contains explicit language not appropriate for young ears. We're sorry. We get overly excited. I just want to let you know ahead of time. With that being said, here we go.
Straight off the pages of thescrumsports.com and into your earholes, it's the Scrum Sports Podcast with your hosts, Trevor Grout and the bald and beautiful Brooks Rowland.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Scrum Sports Unfiltered,
You alright there, buddy? Get a little excited? First show back in about a month or so?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this. We could be one of those shows that does a show every week. But I really truly feel like we need to go to maybe bi-monthly? Maybe twice a month?
Something like that. I think that that could work. And, you know, especially when we've got big, crazy news that's been happening throughout this entire week. Speaking of which, I wish we had a breaking news liner because I just want to put it out there. Erik Karlsson finally got traded
to the San Jose Sharks. You want me to do that? I do that so much better.
Do it.
Walk, 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 walk.
See, I was going more for the Price is Right version.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Erik Karlsson is off the market, at least for one season. There is a chance he's still going to be a UFA at the end of the season unless the Sharks work out some kind of long-term extension with him. But the thing that bugs me the most about that trade, let me stop that for 1 second. So obviously I'm Trevor Grout, joined as always by the bald and beautiful Brooks Rowland. And on this week's show, obviously, we're going to talk the Karlsson trade, clearly. Steve Yzerman, you know, the end of an era.
Yep.
And who'd have thunk it? The Bucks are 1-0 under Fitzmagic.
And they beat the Saints in a shootout of all fucking things.
No shit. Once again, viewer discretion or listener discretion is advised. This podcast may contain illicit language not appropriate for young ears.
Earmuffs.
But the one thing about the Karlsson trade that bothers me, the Lightning could have made that trade. There was really nobody of value per se that San Jose gave up.
No, and that's a puzzling thing from Ottawa's perspective, is that they didn't get at least one, you know, decent forward or defenseman that's on an upward trajectory.
Wait a minute! I just found out why!
Why is that?
Mark Bergevin has been traded to the Ottawa Senators as their GM!
Well, you got to remember one thing. Eugene Melnick is still the Senators' owner.
That's true.
And as long as he's their owner, they're going to be an absolute clusterfuck.
Oh, he's batshit fucking crazy. Batshit fucking crazy. The fact of the matter is, they didn't give up anything. And the Lightning have a stockpile of prospects. A stockpile. I mean, send Ottawa Matthew Joseph and Taylor Radish. Or Boris Kachuk. Hell! Send him Slater Cuckoo!
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying for a while, give Cuckoo a chance. I mean, that would be the chance. If he had gone to Ottawa, he definitely would have slotted probably on their second or third pair up there at least. But it is kind of interesting how you mentioned that, you know, and I believe the Lightning could have done this trade as well, but maybe they apparently didn't think that it was worth it. But you got to figure, San Jose's not going to... They didn't sign Karlsson to an extension as part of this deal.
Here's the other thing, though. does the Lightning have the cap room only trading prospects to make that trade?
That's the big question, because you have to look ahead to the Lightning's cap situation after this season. You had to figure Girardi's a UFA. He's going to be gone. Bryn Coburn's a UFA. He'll probably be gone as well.
There's about $10 million under gone off the cap.
Well, that's probably closer to $7 million. But then you got to figure Ryan Callahan is a prime candidate to be bought out after this
year. Well, Coburn's contract's only about $5 million.
No, that's like 3.7.
Is it 3? I thought it was closer to 5.
No. Strawman's contract is about 4 or 5.
Okay, so 4. Between 5. Girardi and Coburn, you're looking at about $7 million. If Callahan, as you were saying, is bought out, there's probably close to $10 million right there. Strawman's a UFA.
I think Strawman's going to get brought back, though, on a short-term deal, say $1 or $2 million with a pay cut, just to kind of serve as like a mentor, a bridge for the younger blue liners that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years, you know, Cal Foote, Eric Chernak, possibly Dominic Machine. So I think that Strawman will be kept around, but Callahan right now counts $5.8 million against the cap. And if they buy him out next summer, they only have to spread that buyout over the next 2 years rather than the next 4 if they had bought him out this summer.
No, but I honestly, God, I think that's what the holdup was. I really do. I truly feel that was the holdup. Is the Lightning, we're not going to be able to send anybody of a cap casualty to Ottawa.
Well, you got to figure that, you know, look at all the guys that have no move, no trade clauses on this team. I mean, there's so many. There's several guys with either a no move clause or a no trade clause. So that would have been difficult to clear space as well. And then you got to figure that next summer, Braden Point is a restricted free agent. They're going to have to sign him to a new deal. Andre Vasilevsky will be eligible to sign an extension July 1st of next summer. It wouldn't kick in for next season, but he's eligible since next year is the final year of his current bridge deal. And then the only thing is, you also have to look at Yanni Gourde, who's going to be a UFA next summer. Depending on how he does, he could be due for a big raise. I mean, you have to take all of that into account. And, I mean, I can kind of see why a deal wasn't made from the Lightning's point of view, even though when you look at the return that the Senators got back from San Jose, I mean, the Sharks didn't give up any premium prospects. They didn't give up any up-and-coming or really, really big-time established players. Like, I figured if the Sharks were to give up anybody, it would have been a guy like Timo Meier, who's a young up-and-coming forward that's shown a lot of potential, or they would have given up an established guy like Tomas Hertl. As it turns out, I mean, they gave up Dylan DeMello, who's basically a third-pairing guy, Chris Tierney, who's really a third-line forward, maybe fourth line guy. They gave up a couple of prospects. They gave up a couple of draft picks, and there's a couple of conditional picks that were thrown in there as well, as basically a way of saying to San Jose, look, you got one over on us with the Mike Hoffman deal. You're not going to do that again with the Carlson deal. So you had all those kind of moving, you know, parts into it as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. They did get one over on the Hoffman deal by flipping him right to Florida. But God, the Lightning could have made this trade if they had the money. If they could have included a Tyler Johnson, Ryan Callahan,
Alex Killorn.
They could have made the deal.
But at the same time, from what I've been able to gather is that it seems like Ottawa is just hell-bent on trading Carlson away from the East. And if you think about it, it's really kind of dumb on their part, because what the hell does it matter where you trade him as long as you get the best possible return? I mean, let's face it. This team, they're a goddamn dumpster fire right now. They're not they're not going to be a cup contender for a long time. They've basically said they're going full on rebuild. I mean, who gives a shit where you trade him? I mean, I understand if you don't want to trade him to, say, Toronto, Montreal, basically your two biggest blood rivals. I get that. But if you wanted to trade him to Tampa Bay or to Florida or to New Jersey or whoever the hell else in the East, who cares? I mean, get your job is to get the best possible return at a time when Carlson's value and the trade market would still be high. If he'd waited until the trade deadline, you have to trade him for pennies on the dollar anyway. And besides, let's face it, they were still going to come out on the losing end of this deal no matter what, because everybody and their brother knows that Ottawa's in a rebuild. Ottawa's basically a raging dumpster fire right now. And that the relationship between Eugene Melnyk and Erik Karlsson was just beyond repair at this point. But at the same time, I still felt like they could have done better in their trade with San Jose. And I think that the Lightning, you know, had the prospects, like you said, to make a deal and still get Karlsson. But that salary cap, unless it goes up, would have been really tricky unless Karlsson took some sort of a discount.
Yeah, and the guy who would have been the one running the reins for this whole time they've been trying to make the trade, Steve Yzerman, has stepped away from the organization. In his words, to spend more time with his family. A lot of Lightning fans are kind of questioning if that's the real reason, or with Ken Holland's contract coming up in Detroit, could there be ulterior motives, and could Stevie Y be heading back to Hockey Town?
Well, that's the thing. That's right now, that's only a question that Steve Yzerman knows the answer to. Now, like you mentioned, Ken Holland's deal, he has signed a 2-year extension, and that's obviously not going to end until 2020. Steve Yzerman's contract with the Lightning, as he's going to remain here as a senior advisor, that ends after this season. I mean, based on the press conference, you know, things that I've read and heard, and just the general vibe that I'm getting, I have no reason to believe that Yzerman's not going to honor that part of the deal. Now, what happens after this year is anyone's guess. Even Yzerman himself said, look, after this season, I don't know. You know, I mean, he could step away and maybe not be a GM ever again. You know, maybe he goes back home to Detroit and takes some time off and then becomes the Red Wings GM. Maybe he takes the job immediately up there. Who knows? I mean, at this point, he's earned the right to basically do whatever he wants once his contract is over. But then again, even Julien Brisebois, the Lightning's new GM, mentioned it himself. He even said, you know, I think it'd be great if he stuck around in that advisor role long term. And maybe he does.
Hashtag trust the Brisebois blueprint.
I like that. I think it works very, very well. Brisebois blueprint.
You should, because you're the one that coined it.
Yes. Well, I'd like to think that I'm the first one that did it, but knowing how Twitter and the internet is, odds are I wouldn't be surprised if somebody already beat me to it. But I know I mentioned it to you, so that's what we're going with for the time being for the show, is the Brisebois blueprint.
You were driving. I was driving. I was at a light. I was able to get it out from the Scrum account. So if nobody else got it before us, we're the first ones.
Yeah, I'll gladly take credit for it if we are. But anyway, getting back to the main crux of the conversation, let's face it, the Lightning are still in good hands with Julien Brisebois as the GM. I mean, he's been working with Yzerman side by side for the last 8 years. I mean, this isn't just, you know, somebody that they brought off the street. Brisebois was brought in at the same time as Yzerman. He's been, like I said, side by side, you know, and I'm sure he's been, you know, a firsthand witness to some of these trades that have been made, some of the signings that have been made. In addition, Brisebois has also been serving as the GM for the Syracuse Crunch. So he knows the organization inside and out. He's got a working relationship, not just with Yzerman, but with Jeff Vinnick, with Al Murray, the head of the scouting department. I mean, this is as seamless of a transition as you will get when you have new management stepping in or somebody else stepping in. This isn't an outsider being brought in. This isn't somebody that, you know, that doesn't know the organization. This isn't Yzerman just all of a sudden deciding, I'm going to step away. I'm leaving the organization immediately. Good luck. You know, this isn't like Patrick Waugh in Colorado 2 years ago when he resigned as their head coach abruptly about a week and a half or 2 weeks before training camp and left them, you know, sitting there with their dick in their hands.
Yeah, that would have been kind of a un Yzerman thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, but guys, if he ends up going back to Detroit, if it happens, he's earned the right to be able to do that. I mean, the guy has been commuting. He never really set up roots here.
His family stayed there.
Yeah. His family, his daughters, they all stayed there. He's been going back and forth. You know, I'm sure he has somewhere here that he lives, you know, maybe a rental property or something.
Yeah.
But he never set up roots here. Detroit is his home. The Lightning organization was lucky enough to have him as their GM for the better part of damn near a decade. And how many GMs in any sport can say they got a decade?
Not very many. And you gotta look at it this way. I've always kind of figured in the back of my head, there was always a chance that Yzerman could go back to Detroit.
You're shaved, very symmetrical head.
Yes. But I figured if it were going to happen, it would be a few years from now. And, you know, it would be something that would have been pushed off into the future. I mean, now, you know, he's no longer the GM and he's in an advisory role. So, I mean, we'll see how things play out. But at the same time, like you mentioned, it's his home. Let's face it. Steve Yzerman grew up and became a man in Detroit. I mean, he was drafted by that team fourth overall way back in 1983 as an 18-year-old. I mean, he played there, you know, for over two decades and then immediately went into an assistant GM role in their front office. You know, he's been working nonstop ever since he retired as a player. And, you know, he built, you know, he learned from Ken Holland when he was up in Detroit. And then when the Lightning job came open after Jeff Vinnick bought the team, he saw that as a chance to kind of, you know, I guess you could say, pun slightly intended, spread his wings as a GM here in Tampa. And we've seen the job that he's done. I mean, he took a team in the Lightning that didn't really have much of a farm system to speak of throughout their history. And now they're a consistent contender year in and year out because A, they draft well. B, they develop these draftees. C, he's made, you know, some free agent signings to supplement that. And for the most part, he's made some very, very smart trades that have worked out very well. And this team is in 1,000 times much better shape now than it was when he first took over the job in 2010.
Yeah, he's still no Art. And I know Art Williams was the owner, but he's still no Art Williams. Hey, Brooksy, Vinny LeCavier is the Michael Jordan of hockey.
Oh, God, that's one of those sound bites that we'll never forget and we'll always laugh at. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just that's one of those things that we just don't bring up anymore is the Art Williams era in Tampa. Kind of like the Cowboys era right before Vinnick took over.
God, I hated those guys.
Oh, they're brutal.
Talking about, well, not Cowboys, but the NFL. Ladies and gentlemen, your Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 1-0 after an amazing game by Fitzmagic. And Fitzmagic has not only earned the NFC Offensive Player of the Week award, but he also earned the FedEx Air Performer.
Air Performance of the Week?
Yes, that one. All these stupid-ass frickin'
awards. And they've been doing those awards for years now, but let me ask you this. When was the last time that you can remember a Bucs game where they completed that many deep passes? I mean, Fitzpatrick was just dropping dimes the whole game.
When was the last Bucs game that a quarterback only missed 7 throws?
Oh, God, I don't even remember.
When was the last Bucs game that the Buccaneer quarterback outrushed the Offensive Rookie of the Year?
That's a pretty damn good question as well.
When's the last time or one of the last times the Bucks dropped 48 points in a game.
That'd be Super Bowl 37.
Very good.
Thank you. Yeah, they've done that three other times before Sunday's game, and I was hoping like hell they'd get 50. I was like, please drop 50 on the Saints in their house. They didn't quite do it, but they still pulled off the win. The defense did just enough, you know, to give the offense or to give the team some breathing room. I know the Saints made that little mini comeback late, but at the same time, my goodness, that offense. And the thing is, the most impressive group on the entire team, obviously besides Fitzpatrick, was the offensive line. I mean, that offensive line just looked like a seasoned group. They were in sync. I mean, they hardly allowed any pressure on Fitzpatrick. Plus, they got some good blocking from the running backs.
You know what's really funny? That offensive line was so good, Fitz could have sat back there, set up a lawn chair, gotten one of those, you know, tasty drinks from Bourbon Street, mm-hmm. probably sipped the entire thing, got up, stumbled a little bit from sipping that so quickly, and still been able to drop that the dimes that he did. I love the memes that are coming out now with Lattimore on that Evans.
Oh, yes. I mean, I saw one where it was just Evans, you know, burning him, Lattimore's face down the turf, and somebody just drew a big L around the whole thing because it was like, it was just a perfect shape of an L. It was great.
The better one was Mike Evans and Dirk Cutter as paramedics, and Lattimore is on the stretcher.
Oh, God. I didn't see that one. I'm going to have to look that up, but that's pretty damn good.
No, that was. But no, Fitzpatrick threw for 417 yards, rushed for 38, 872 touchdowns, it felt like.
Yeah. I mean, if you had him and if you were one of the rare souls that started him in fantasy football.
If you were the only soul who started him in fantasy football.
AKA if you were one of his family members.
Hi, Miss Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. You probably got 40-plus points from Ryan Fitzpatrick in fantasy if you were starting him.
I wonder which one of his six kids, soon to be seven, actually started their dad in fantasy football.
I'm going to say at least two of them.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, why not? I mean, it's their dad. Of course, they're going to pick their dad, and they're going to start him. I mean, why the hell not? And here's the big question.
I mean, if it was the older kid, they'd be like, okay, you know, they may be realistic.
Right, right. But at the same time, I mean, I can't help but wonder, can he keep this up? Yeah, I mean, the Eagles defense is pretty solid coming into week two.
But they didn't look particularly good against Matt Ryan. I mean, that first Thursday night game, neither team really looked, and it was week one.
It was sloppy. It was a pretty sloppy game. I mean, at the same time, you know, Julio Jones went off, but then again, Julio Jones goes off against everybody. I mean, that's not really all you can do against Julio Jones is just, you know, try and contain him as best as you can, but he's going to make his plays. And the thing is that I'm thinking, can the Bucs actually do what they did, you know, against the Saints, or do what they did against the Eagles like they did against the Saints? Because, you know, notice that the Bucs essentially played turnover-free football in week one. You know, against an Eagles pass rush that's, you know, I would say is, you know, pretty fierce, and against the defense overall that's pretty solid as well. I mean, this is a pretty solid test, I think, for both of these teams going into week two. You know, can the Eagles at least bottle up? How much are they going to double team Mike Evans? And how much, you know, what am I trying to say here? Basically, how much single coverage is Chris Godwin going to see? You know, how much single coverage is O.J. Howard going to see? Because let's face it, this offense, receiver-wise and tight end-wise, it's running on all cylinders. And as long as the Bucs O-line continues to play the way that they have, you know, I think that there's a good chance that I'm not saying Fitzpatrick is going to go for 400-plus again, but I don't think throwing for 300-plus and a couple scores is out of the realm of, or, you know, the realm of possibility.
No, and that is obviously could happen. The Bucs and Eagles have had a love affair, you know, or a hate affair, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. love-hate relationship. I'm sure the Eagles are still, you know, a little bit burned that not only did the Bucks close down, you know, their old stadium.
Well, maybe the fans were for a while, but now that the Eagles are defending Super Bowl champs, I don't really think that they care about that much anymore, but I don't know.
But then they opened the new stadium with a loss.
No, this is true. This is true. And those are the fun days of yesteryear when the Bucks were themselves defending Super Bowl champs once upon a time. God, that feels like a lifetime ago. But yeah,
it pretty much is a lifetime ago.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Brooks. It's literally 16 years ago.
God, we're old. We are getting old as hell, man.
Well, that does it for us this week, folks. Brooks, hit him with your Twitter.
BrooksRoland82.
And you can find me, of course, at TrevorG_Scrum. Find us our Twitter, at The Scrum Sports. Check us out on the world wide webs, thescrumsports.com. Also, check out our buddy, Joey_Flash, lead man for the band I Am One. You can check out their great song, Waiting to Tell You, the theme for the Scrum Sports Unfiltered, at the letter I, the letter M, the number one, bandcamp.com. So go download their music, great tracks. Thanks to our buddy Concept Art 76 for the great logo. That does it for us this week, ladies and gentlemen. As always, thanks for everything, and we'll talk to you soon.